now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
And here we go. It is a Friday. Johnny Donovan, thank you very, very much. And it is time for Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the phone from the West Coast. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, John. Seattle is here. 3 hours time difference, but going to be a nice day in Seattle.
Well, it's going to be a pretty good day around here as well. Let's talk about, before we talk about why you're in Seattle, the marathon this Sunday. Will you be back in time to shoot the cannon?
I would not miss the marathon. I have a very important role to play. I pull a cord which sets off a cannon which tells everybody that now it's time to probably get going. There are four or five different starts the race because there are two different kinds of wheelchairs and there's a number of handicap and then there's a separate one for women. But it's a lot of fun. I plan to be there, and Jill Vitale is
exactly
going to be there.
We're going to talk to Jill about it in the second hour here, but yep, she is undertaking her first marathon. My boys did it a couple of years ago, and they said once was enough.
You and I should be ashamed of ourselves. She can do it, and I don't see either of us out there.
No, I don't. You can be ashamed all you want. I'm not. I don't think I know I couldn't do it. You are in Seattle at a what is it exactly?
It's a conference of mayors, and I was honored to be invited to give the speech at lunchtime and talk about an environmental thing, which is very important to New York and to all cities and to this country and actually to the world. This case I'm going to be talking about carbon and how we reduce the emissions by using economics. And there are a couple different ways you can do it. And I'm going to propose one of the ways, which is really to, at the source, say if you pollute, you're going to have to pay a fee. We'll use that fee to reduce taxes, payroll taxes, which would be good for the economy. If we can reduce the use of carbon, it will be good for the air we breathe and slow down global warming. But it's a little bit controversial.
Is this the carbon credit that we hear so much about? If you pollute, you can buy credits, which sort of get you off the hook?
The way I describe it in my speech, you try to get to the right place with carbon credits, but it's like taking three left turns instead of one right turn. And the ways to really do it is to have a charge at the source, and that would get power plants to move from polluting kinds of fuel to less polluting kinds of fuel. It would give incentives for people to use and develop technologies that would make fuels burn cleaner. And it would leave you with taxing or charging fees or however you wanted to do it, a very few places where the oil comes out of the ground, natural gas comes out of the ground, or coal comes out of the ground, rather than the lots of companies that use energy where there's just a lot more possibility for, not corruption, but to have the economics not generate the savings that you want. The more complex this is, the less everybody's going to understand it, the more room there is for a number of different middlemen, which makes it less efficient. And there's no economist that I have talked to, and we've really done a lot of research, that doesn't think the ways I'm going to propose at lunchtime isn't the right ways to go. And they all end it with, but for the politics. The politics go in one direction. If you really want to get things done, it goes in the other direction. And I just don't think that we should be sitting here worrying about the politics and how it sells in the next election. What we should do is do what's right for all of us. We have a very big vested interest. We are, you know, the global warming indications are scary, but more importantly, things I care about because it's my job is how do you get clean up the air in our city and how do you get tax revenues to do what you want. I'm opposed to subsidies where they don't do what we want to do, for example, with ethanol. We're subsidizing corn-based ethanol, and if you want to subsidize farmers, I have no problems with that. There are good reasons to send money to agriculture, but I don't think we should do it as part of an energy plan. And let's separate these things out and be a little more honest as to why we're doing different things.
All right. Do I understand this in your recommendations here or your ideas on how to clean up power plants, for example, that if indeed the government taxes the polluter, that tax would make they would have to pass that tax along to the consumer. Therefore, they would be less competitive, and that would be the incentive for them to clean their act up.
You know, economics and capitalism work. If a power plant can burn gas or oil at a lower price and more efficient than with coal, they will switch. And if it goes in the other direction because of technology or economics, they'll switch back. Most power plants are designed in this day and age to handle multiple different kinds of fuel. And in fact, they do switch regularly when prices change. But what we could do is you make the more polluting fuels cost more, and you use the monies that are generated by that to reduce payroll taxes. So, yes, it gets passed on, but the people that suffer from getting passed on get the benefit back in the other direction, and the whole world benefits because we pollute the air less.
All right. One more thing on what you just said about this, the politics of it. We hear a lot of noise, and there's a lot of hot air, to use a bad pun. Energy independence, yet nobody wants to go there when it's time to change the laws.
It's sad, but, you know, we want wind power, but we don't like to see windmills. We want to have new technologies, but we invest, something like less than half the amount of money in trying to find new energy sources than we did 10 or 15 years ago. We want to have more miles per gallon in our cars. Congress did have a plan between roughly 1975 and 85, and they increased the average miles per gallon in this country in automobiles from something like 12 miles a gallon to 24. But then in the mid-80s, they lost their will, and in a misguided effort to protect Detroit, which really hurt Detroit and put an awful lot of people out of work. It's really sad. They were pandered to, and it was just the wrong things. You can't hold back technology. Detroit would have been better if we had forced them to be the leaders, and instead of the Japanese selling all these cars, American companies would have sold these cars. But we stopped insisting that Detroit make cars more efficient. And if you think about what we could have done in the last 20 years, it really was a great opportunity wasted. And it hurt an enormous number of people who no longer have good paying jobs in the automobile industry. Now they're working in much lower paying jobs, and it was all misguided. And they should look to their leaders and say, where the heck were you?
And again, today we hear Chrysler going to be laying off a significant population.
Well, there's no question. You know, cars like the Prius are what people are buying. People want efficient cars. It's economically better, and maybe they feel that they're less polluting and they should do their part. But when you try to protect an industry, I think history shows that government does a terrible job, and the unintended consequences when you try to protect an industry invariably are bad. And here we really, you know, we, Congress, we, the American people, bear some responsibility, I think, in leaving Detroit vulnerable to competition, in giving them a kind of what we thought was protection, and in fact was isolating them from improving their products. And then when the consumer comes along, the consumer buys the best, no matter where it's made.
All right. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. We've gone a little long in our first segment here. Stick around near the phone out there in Seattle. We'll come right back at 77 WABC. Mayor Michael Bloomberg on phone with us this morning on the Friday John Gambling Show. It was a week ago tomorrow, last Saturday, in the dead of media night, that the governor, along with the head of Homeland Security, discussed a deal that was cut with a three-tiered driver's license in New York City. You've been outspoken about this. How do you feel about the fact that it's continuing to be talked about and it looks like it's going to happen?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I talked to the governor yesterday, and I said, look, I'll do everything I can to be supportive. I think we need the governor to be able to focus on lots of things, and when you have one issue that dominates the media, it really is difficult for government to do all of the different things it should be doing simultaneously. In the case of the driver's licenses, I had been asked months ago, I think, and as had our police commissioner, Ray Kelly, what did we think about an idea like this? And this is not the first time people have proposed things along these lines. And both of us thought that it was more of a security risk and wasn't the right thing to do, wouldn't improve traffic safety. And it did compromise what has become the sort of gold standard of identification, your driver's license. Everybody uses it as the standard of whether or not who you are. You have to prove your identity when you check into a school or do anything else, apply to become registered to vote or all of these different things, and buy a gun even. The governor, I'd expressed my views to the governor privately, which is, you know, that's what I should be doing, is telling him where we come out, but being supportive when I can. The new plan, I said when he came out with it, with a three-tiered thing, is a step in the right direction, and I think the governor should be commended for trying, but we still don't think that it should be going along these lines. I think that we have to make sure that identification given out in this country is given to those who are here and illegally. Now, when it comes to helping undocumented people in our city, as you know, I have a executive order out there. We will not ask anybody their documentation status unless they are arrested or they apply for a federal program that requires us to give it only to people who are citizens or have documentation. And nobody should ever feel afraid to go to the police if they have a domestic violence problem or send their kids to school or go to the hospitals to get preventive care or be treated when they're sick. And it's very important that everybody understands we are a compassionate society and we'll continue to do that. But in the case of the driver's licenses, I still think that it's not there yet, although, as I said before, I think the governor really is trying.
All right, the gun question. Have anybody in your office checked whether or not this proposed third-tier license would be applicable for an application to buy a gun?
Well, the federal law says you can't sell guns to undocumented and to people with criminal records. And that's the law, and we should make sure that that law is enforced. I did talk to the governor yesterday about this particular issue, and his staff and our staff are working on it to clarify. But keep in mind, an awful lot of the guns that I'm trying to keep off the streets were sold out of state. And I was in Virginia yesterday and endorsed a Republican state senator who's running against the Democratic state candidate. The Democrat, in this case, wants guns in the hands of everybody, kids and everybody else, and the Republican doesn't. I think it just goes to show this is not a partisan issue. This is a common sense issue. We shouldn't have guns in the hands of people with criminal records, period. There's a federal law against it, and we should give the police the ability to enforce that law.
Do you believe that the governor is going to stick with this proposal? Did he indicate that he was going to ride this one out?
I don't know. The governor understands he's got lots of things to do, and I think he really is trying. You'll have to ask the gov.
Ask the gov. Okay, well, maybe we'll make that for Monday's program if we can get his attention here. Let's see here. I've got a whole list of things. The residency rule, that always seems to come up on a regular basis. One of the unions is suggesting that maybe it should be relaxed.
Well, it is something that we have negotiated the city with each of these unions. Police, fire, teachers can live outside of New York City. I think in all cases you have to be in a contiguous county, although over the years contiguous somehow or other included Rockland and Suffolk.
Well, there's only a river in between. It's not.
Well, they just, you know, it's a. But anyways, that's the real world. We did negotiate with DC 37 in their last contract. The city got some things that it wanted, and DC 37 got some things that it wanted. One of the things that it got was to have the same agreement that its members could live outside the city, and they need city council approval for it, and that's what the brouhaha is. Now, you should know a couple of things about living outside the city. If you're a city employee living outside the city, you still have to pay city taxes. So we don't lose any tax revenue. And number two, the requirement to live in the city was created in the days when people were fleeing this city and we had lots of vacant buildings and the future of the city was in doubt. Today, we have exactly the reverse problem. We have too many people trying to live in too little housing. And if you could take a little bit of that pressure off, it's fine.
Well, is it time to make this thing go away?
Say again?
Is it time to make the residency rule go away?
Well, I think we want to negotiate and get something for the city wants to get something for it. And we did do that in our agreement with DC 37, but we need the city council approval. We've already done it in past years with police, fire, sanitation, corrections, and teachers. I'm pretty sure all of those have the ability to do this. And that I think the movement in the city council, some people say, well, you know, it's taking jobs away from people that live in New York City. Well, people in New York City, we want to make sure that we create a lot of jobs for them. We want to make sure everybody that wants a job can get a job. But in this case, there would not be very many people, I think, that would want to move out. And it would help us with the housing problem. And it is something that the city got something for. And also, I think it's a fairness issue. You know, some groups have it, and then when you have one group that does not, the head of DC 37, Lillian Roberts, says, you know, why not us? What's wrong with us? Why are we being held to a different standard? We negotiated in good faith with the city. We gave something in return. Now, why is the city council standing there? And I think the question is, that's a good question.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're made it around to the half hour. Hang on. We'll be right back in just a second. 77 WABC, but on the half hour, quick news update. Here's Babita Harion. WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the Friday John Gambling Show. The mayor is on the West Coast giving the keynote address at lunch today. Mr. Mayor, we've talked about this before. It has to do with the TWU and the checkoff on the workers' stubs to contribute to the union. The judge said that the TWU had to promise that they would never strike again. Now the MTA is requesting that they let that go.
Judge is right. Period. End of story.
Okay.
I mean, this is a union that has three times broken the law, struck and hurt the city, put people's lives in danger, hurt our economy, send exactly the wrong message to our kids. Stop me when you get bored with this. The judge said, I'm not going to let you have your checkoff privileges until you, the union, promise that you won't do it again. He didn't ask them to do anything else other than promise they won't do it again. And they're unwilling to do that. The president of the union says, well, I won't do it. Well, listen, this is a union that could change presidents and have lots of dissension within it. It's all well documented. I don't think the judge asked for anything outrageous. I think the judge was very generous, as a matter of fact, letting them off the hook. He didn't penalize them other than one fine, which they did pay, a few million dollars, as I remember. He said, you just can't have checkoff privileges, which is the most important thing to any union, or a very important thing, unless you, the union, sign a letter saying you promise you won't do it. And they won't do that. And then people say, oh, well, you know, let them off the hook in the interest of good labor relations. What about good public policy? What about, protecting all of us who have to get to work and pay the bills? This is just, the MTA in this case, respectfully, couldn't be more wrong.
As far as you know, is the judge going to hold the union to what he said originally?
We certainly have asked the judge to do that, and I don't know what's going to happen, but our corporation counsel, Michael Cardozo, certainly has made that case to the judge, and we will continue to do so. This is not anti-union. This is just protecting the public. All you got to do is promise not to break the law, and they're unwilling to do that. Why would they? Why are they unwilling to do it? Only reason I can think of is I guess you think you might do it again.
I think you're probably right, and that's the only reason you could come up with. School grades, they come out on Monday, the new system that you and the chancellor have put into play to grade the institutions.
Parents have a right to know how good or bad the school they send their kid to. I would love to tell you that all schools are perfect. They're not. We've come a long ways. We have a long ways to go. But to hide information from the public and particularly from parents of kids is just morally, I think, wrong. And we're going to tell the parents. We have objective ways of grading each school. There's an appeals process. We've been through all of that. But some schools will get A's and some schools will get F's, and then most schools will be in the middle. And our objective is to make all these schools better. And if I were a parent of a kid in a poor school, I would be screaming. And that's exactly what should happen. The parent should have the information and then should demand that we do a better job.
There is sort of a warning article in the paper today suggesting that some schools that people believe are, I think, B plus or an A, are not going to fall that way come Monday.
You know, the facts are the facts. I mean, I don't know what to say. If that is the case, John, it's all the more reason why we should be putting out these report cards, because people are misinformed. And you can question how we grade at each school, but it's fair. You can question whether it's comprehensive. It's difficult to come up with grades when there are so many different things. But common sense says there are good schools and there are bad schools, and we've got to make sure the good schools keep getting better, but particularly the bad schools have to change or they get closed. And I don't know, there's probably 30 or 40 schools that get an F, and I think most of those will get closed. We have been closing schools that don't educate our kids. The schools aren't there to give employment to anybody. The schools are there to educate, and if they don't, we'll move the resources to those that do.
There was a story, we had an animated discussion on this very program this week, the story about the principal that is considering rewarding students for good grades by giving cell phone minutes and or cell phones.
Well, there's no principal. There's a company that has this idea. And we have said that we will study it and look at it, and we'll see. Cell phones do not belong in schools. In this case, this company had the idea that they have a cell phone that you could turn off so it wouldn't work in the schools. Now, there is technology that can block cell phone signals, and I'm told that it's illegal to use, because that would make a lot of sense. Just put it in every school, and even if the kid carried the cell phone in, they couldn't use it during the day. And I'd love to do that, because it would save all the hassle of whether or not you can carry a cell phone. It would let you have your cell phone coming and going to school. You wouldn't have to store it outside of school. But I'm told that technology is illegal. Here, this is a different kind of phone where it's built into the phone, and they would have a program where if the kid does better, they get free minutes on the phone. Now, the company that sells this product will make money, and nothing wrong with that. But we certainly have not signed on, but we'll listen to anything. And
what's your view of incentivizing good grades?
Well, there's nothing wrong with incentivizing good grades. As you know, our conditional cash transfer experiment is going to try to do that. But the cell phone thing is whether or not a kid is going to do their homework and study harder just because they get a few free minutes is something that you want to look at. And some people would say that's questionable. It also begs the whole issue of, if you can have some kinds of cell phones and not others legally, could you do that? And do you really want your teachers and principals? It's tough enough now keeping cell phones out of schools, and their ability to do that is somewhat limited. If they've also got to check for which kind it is, it just makes it more complex. But I don't think we should automatically say no, and we certainly aren't there yet to do it, and I don't know how that'll come out.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got a little technical thing we got to take care of here. You hold on. We're going to take a break, and we'll get right back. And don't forget your phone calls, too, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. You get to ask the mayor questions long distance. Stick around. Coming right back. WABC. Back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. We will get to your questions in just a moment. Mr. Mayor, story this morning, troubling hate crime complaints up 20% over last year. Anti-Semitic incidents 36% in the last 90 days. What do you think is going on?
Number one, it is worrisome. Number two, we take every single one of these very seriously. I can't explain why all of a sudden there is this spike, but we shouldn't just say, oh, this is something that's copycat. If you do it, even if you got the idea from seeing somebody else do it, it is just as morally reprehensible. Our city depends on people living together, working together, and respecting each other, their cultures and everything else about them. And it's sad that there are some people who I guess I would define as sick. But they just got to stop it. We're gonna find out who they are, and the police are working overtime on it, and we will stop it.
It seems counter to what we have seen generally over the last 3 or 4 years, and that is the reduction of crime.
And that's why it's really worrisome.
Exactly.
You know, and that's why you got to take it very seriously.
Okay. Before we get back to the phones, we talk about congestion pricing, commuter pricing. The Port Authority is now talking about toll hikes on their bridges and tunnels. Are you worried that the cost of commuting into New York City could affect the economy?
Quite the contrary. The whole idea, and the Port Authority is really doing exactly what congestion pricing is trying to do. The Port Authority is making it less desirable to drive when they raise their tolls on the bridges and tunnels, and they're using the money to enhance mass transit, making the alternative more desirable. And that's what congestion pricing does. And if we don't do that, John, we won't have an economy. The problem we have in the city is that the time to get to work or the time to get to the school or the hospital or the store or your is just growing such that it will drive people away. You know, you listen to the radio in the morning or the helicopter reports, you know, 45-minute delay at the Lincoln Tunnel, an hour delay at the GW. I mean, how would you like to have a commute that takes 2 hours each way? Think about the percentage of your day that is spent commuting, or in when you're in Midtown, you don't know how long it's going to take you to get across town or downtown, so you can't schedule your meetings, or if you can't get from one appointment to, if you're a plumber, from one job to another, you can't get to the store, which we want you to come and patronize. What's strangling our economy and driving up costs is not the cost of commuting, it is the delays in the commute
and the wasted time. Let's go to the telephones, Mr. Mayor. Long distance here. I've got John on the line from New York City. John, you've got the mayor. What's your question?
I'm John McDermott, and I have my office in the Empire State Building on the 55th floor. And Mr. Mayor, I just think you're doing a terrific job managing the city of New York. And earlier this week, John Gambling had on his show Jim Kallstrom, who works with the Children's Foundation. And I told his assistant, John Gambling's assistant, that I'm going to invite Jim Kallstrom out to lunch and present him with a check for his foundation for $10,000,
wow,
a certified check.
John, that's awesome.
That is really very nice. Let the record show, we are not related. I don't think I've ever talked to you before. Although I wish we were.
Exactly. John, thanks for the great words. And I know Jim Kallstrom is going to be very, very happy with that, helping a lot of kids whose fathers and mothers have passed away because of the conflicts and other situations. Nicely done, Johnny. Thanks a lot. We continue here. Let's go to line three. Fred in New York City, what's your question for Mayor Bloomberg?
Hi. I'd like to suggest that environmental science be taught as a very important science in New York City schools.
I think you're talking to the choir here, right, Mr. Mayor?
Right. I mean, we are. Enough, probably not. But I think you couldn't be more correct. There are some important things in life that we don't teach in our schools or don't teach enough. One is what we're doing to the environment. One is what we do to our own health and our family's health when we eat poorly or don't wear seat belts or helmets when we're bicycling or, you know, any one of smoking and those kinds of things. Another one is we don't teach anything about the law generally, and we live in a system of laws. People, when they grow up, have to know what the law is and how it's made and how to work within it and keep from breaking the law. Accounting is another thing we don't teach our kids. We all have families with budgets, and we have to figure out how we're going to make our money go further, how much we should save for the future, how we should prepare for our retirement. And I think all of those things are good subjects for school. Sadly, the schools in many cases are just struggling to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. But we really have to, if people are going to have a great life, teach them the other stuff as well.
I've always found it unusual that we don't teach basic home economics. And I don't mean cooking. I mean dollars and cents economics to use in a home.
Yeah, that's the me, you know, teaching them accounting. You know, you don't have to know very much about double entry bookkeeping, but you do have to know how to save and why it's important to the present value of money, why a dollar today is worth more than a dollar down the road. You have to understand risk because you want to put some money away in case you lose your job or it's an unexpected expense. You have to know how to fill out forms to apply for scholarships if your kid wants to go to school, or how you decide what's the best medical care program for yourself. And it's all tied up in dollars, and you're right.
All right, Fred, thanks for the good question. Jack out on Long Island, it's your turn with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Hello, Mayor Bloomberg. I wanted to let you know that I think you're absolutely right in dealing with the congestion problem in Midtown Manhattan. I had provided the Congestion Mitigation Commission with a request to address them on Monday, which is the last day of the public hearings that you're having.
Right.
And I wanted to suggest how radio frequency transponder technology could not only address that, but it could simultaneously address the licensing issue that's on the statewide level, so many people's minds.
You know, those sound like good ideas, and there's lots of good ideas out there. What you should do is call your state assemblyman or state senator, or if you live in the city, you don't, city council person, and say, we've got to stand up and make a hard decision here and decide what to do about mass transit rather than just postponing till after the next election cycle. There's always going to be another election cycle. And that's why we don't seem to be willing to address these issues. There's no free lunch. We are going to have congestion and pollution, or we're going to have to pay to not have congestion and pollution. The pay may be in fees, it may be in inconvenience, it may be in not being able to take your car someplace, whatever it is. You can't have both. And our kids are going to the hospital with an asthma rate four times the national average in some areas. The people, if you live out on Long Island, the commute into Manhattan and the commute on Long Island because of people coming into Manhattan who are on the same roads, even if you don't, you get slowed down by them. And then people say, oh, you know, my people wouldn't like to have to give up their cars. I don't know why anybody likes an hour and a half or two-hour commute. I've never met anybody that said they wouldn't pay to reduce the commute. And I think most people, if they saw mass transit be from where they are to where they want to go, if they saw it be more pleasurable, if they saw it be faster, a lot of people would move. Not everybody, but
absolutely, because that's what I discovered that myself. I was a car commuter because of the hours I worked, and now that I can take a train, believe me, the train is the best way to go, even on those few days where it doesn't go right.
Yep, absolutely, and it's very seldom that it doesn't go right, in all fairness to the MTA.
No, you're absolutely right. We're almost out of time here. Your reaction to the new skipper for the Yankees, Judge Rohde?
I put a call into him and congratulated him. He called me and left me a voicemail saying thank you very much, and I look forward to next season when we're going to have a subway season with New York winning the World Series.
I think that's great optimism, and that's where each season should start, right? Right?
Absolutely. Wait until next year.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Enjoy your speech today at lunchtime, and we'll catch up with you next Friday.
And let's cheer Jill on in the marathon. She's
running for
a good cause.
Yeah, right. Along with a few tens of thousands of others.
Yep.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Enjoy that on Sunday here in New York City. Stick around. Chris Wallace and our marathoners, straight ahead.